Tuned with Dean Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky. Please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Bonds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Freezing Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts breeding program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
The PA Horse Breeders Association presents the new and improved Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Six $100,000 stakes for PA sired, PA bred Zoot Parks. Two 6-furlong contests on PA Derby Day. The two-year-olds then go 7 furlongs on December 30th. Here's the big change. The last two races are in August 2025 for three-year-olds. Then 50,000 in breeder bonuses go to the top three horses in the series. For more, go to PABred.com.
This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back exactly 15 into the second half on this Tuesday and a busy morning with, I don't even know how am I going to put together the visuals for the show listing. Ned Allard, Tim Yakteen, Dale Romans, Mark Glatt, Eric Kruljack, Todd Pletcher, and Andy Serling in there for a little added zest, a little punditry. Mark Glatt's going to join us here momentarily, and let me get some of this out of the way. I guess we can move the Laurel, right? We got the Laurel action out. Mark Glatt, who we have not spoken to in too long, and go back to the West Coast, back to Del Mar, and congratulate Mark on Dr. Venkman. A successful stretch out in the San Diego and pointing toward imagining the Pacific Classic. Mark, congratulations. Yeah, but yes. Not ready. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, pull Mark up and try that again. Okay. This is there we go. All right. And I'll pull up Glatt. I should really get his I've got to talk to him about I've got to talk to him about getting onto the TOC as well. Here, let me. I'll try him, Brian. He might not have expected. No, maybe not. He's on the. You know what? He's actually. I'm going to guess. He's on the phone with a client. Let's do this. Shift gears, and I'll come back to Glatt. We'll come back to Mark after Andy and before Todd. All right. Yeah, that's what I'm going to tell him. All right. Yeah, I'll tell him like 8:30 or so. All right. Obviously, when it comes to horsemen's conversations, the priority for them, rightly, is the client. Horseman's radio show conversations. Let's see if we can't. No, you can't get Cruel Jack either. Oh boy! All right, now we're going to run into some trouble, because the closer we get to 11, the tougher it's going to be. All right, Doug Nachman is arguing with me in a I'll bring this right out in front. Doug sent me a note. He said, you know, the idea of giving somebody the favorite in the multi race wagers. The idea was that, you know, to not have to provide refunds. That's not what it was. Steve Crist was involved in this, and the idea was, in fact, I mean, yes, okay, money stays in the pool, but the idea was to try to give players, that option. Steve, we've had this conversation, and with Steve himself, I'll have him come on and have it again. At this point, though, the technology has evolved enough that we should have the ability to offer a selection, you know, specifically have a alternate that could be plugged in the event, you know, by all rights, if they had tickets that can build parlays, and that isn't even new technology. I mean, the parlay cards, remember the parlay cards? If they've already got that technology, why can't it be employed now? It wasn't instituted. It was done in to protect the bettors to a degree. I know some people will still, would still argue that point. I think we got Mark Glatt now, as it turns out. Is that you, Mark? Mark? No? Yes? It sounds like he's there. Brian, pick up on him if he's there. He's obviously... There he is. Glatt.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
I'm good. We're kind of we're surveying all the the recent Del Mar winners, and we talked to Yak Team. We're going to talk to Cruel Jack, and got to talk to you, because Dr. Venkman, in perfect coordination with the release of this Ghostbusters movie we watched the other night, and I was thinking of you and Dr. Venkman, stretches out nicely. You got to be thrilled.
Oh yeah, it was super exciting. Grade 2 win at Del Mar. ran against a very, very tough horse on paper, and you know, to stretch out for the first time in a race like that and actually get the job done was fantastic.
Talk about what goes into that, Mark, because certainly when you look at his work tab, the five furlongs July 6th, then a six furlong workout July 13th, and then, you know, explain to people what goes on in between in terms of long, slow gallops, you know, to build his stamina.
Well, he's kind of a natural horse, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to be in the Bing Crosby or the San Diego. I've been itching to get him stretched out, and so I really could train the horse, you know, up to both races about the same way. Hmm. And so it just kind of came down to, you know, ultimately making a decision. You know, it was tough because, you know, we know he's a pretty decent sprinter, although six furlongs being, maybe a hair short for him. We've always wanted to get him stretched out. So, you know, what ultimately led to the decision was the first couple days of racing at Del Mar, we saw that speed was very tough to get by and that horses weren't closing much. And I was afraid he might draw the inside in the sprint. And so ultimately we ended up deciding on the San Diego. You know, going in, do you really want to stretch out against a horse like, for the first time against a horse like Arabian Knight? You know, and ultimately I think we made the right decision.
It seems like it. And you look at him from a pedigree standpoint, he's a go zapper out of an archmare. And, you know, then you look at him physically, it didn't feel like there's any reason why this horse, you know, wasn't going to go a route of ground.
Yeah, he's got a lot of natural air. He's a horse that never gets tired. You know, he's an efficient mover. And, you know, he's just never been able to put a long enough campaign to this point together to get him stretched out. And so just kind of worked out, he got a nice seven furlong race under his belt, you know, in the triple bim. And it just seemed to make the most sense.
I love it. And of course, if the ownership, did you bring it up to them, or is it something that, you know, you guys have discussed at some point and you went ahead and made the commitment by the time entries came around?
Well, the ownership group, you know, they're great. They've allowed me to give the horse time off when he's needed it. And they ultimately left the decision up to me.
Nice.
And they, you know, they'd have been good with either race going into it as we were thinking it out. But, you know, the opportunity to run two turns and, you know, now maybe a chance to run in the Pacific Classic is very exciting. Obviously opens up the options moving forward because he can, you know, he can still sprint very well as well. So we'll see what the next couple of weeks bring, see how he kind of bounces back, and we'll go from there.
It's an interesting scenario too with this horse, Mark, because you got two Breeders' Cups in a row that are coming at Del Mar, and he's now 3-for-3 over the course.
Yeah, you know, with Breeders' Cup being here this year and next, home court advantage if we happen to get that far into the year with him, and he certainly likes the track and looking forward to what the next start might bring.
Dr. Venkman and $105,000 Keeneland Yearling and the ownership, Clint Bunch, Dan Agnew, Mark Cohen, and Jim Haley. That had to be a fun, it was a fun scene on Saturday.
Yeah, they were all there, unfortunately, except for Dan Agnew. He was at a family reunion, but everybody else attended, and it was super, super exciting, to accomplish the two-turn experience or two-turn race, and you know, beat a horse like Arabian Knight amongst some others in there. So it was very satisfying.
Antonio Freisu aboard.
Yeah, Antonio rides a lot of horses for me. He's turned into a terrific rider for us here in Southern California. He's right near the top of the standings and really has come a long way since coming to the U.S.
Well, win like the San Diego, nice way to, you know, get the season moving along. And you had already done nicely up to that point. Opening week, right? Opening week, you won. I'm going to draw a blank now in the Wicker.
Yeah, First Piece won the Wicker.
First Piece. Thank you. Talk about that horse, actually, right? That fantastic. How about that?
Yeah, he's a horse we bought out of a two-year-old sale, kind of a no-pedigree horse. And, you know, he's been a nice horse from day one. You know, he rarely, you know, I mean, he's 1, 2, 3 almost every race he's ever ran, except for his first race when he was on the dirt. And early on in his career, we always thought he would get a mile, but he just wouldn't relax very well. He'd want to pull and pull early on and be too keen, and he'd empty out a little bit late in his mile races. But now as a four-year-old, we noticed when we started this campaign and the sprints that he was relaxing, you know, much better than he ever had early on in races. And so we felt much more confident about him going a mile. And he did in the Wicker get a perfect scenario. He did do a better job of relaxing. He settled back good for Mike. But he also had three horses ding-donging and going very quickly. So, you know, we were fortunate to get the most perfect trip possible. And you saw how he finished with relaxing back there a little bit and making a good run.
Well, nice to have two stake wins in the first 2 weeks of the meet. You've also had a nice run of allowance winners. Tiger Horn, Atomic Drop won a claiming event. You probably were a little disappointed with She's the Law, but obviously, you know, a maiden win is pretty forthcoming.
Yeah, she's a nervous filly. She's still kind of trying to figure things out. You know, once we got her on the turf, she's been competitive. She's ran well. And I think as she gets a little older and mentally matures more, maybe it'll take till she's 4 years old. But, you know, she's a talented filly. Unfortunately, she's still a maiden, but she's knocking on the door and ready to graduate sometime soon.
Well, and I certainly, before we talk about some horses that are in the entry box or some that we're going to see soon, you had to be delighted. Hero status absolutely gave parenting a huge scare and a nice figure, too. 100 buyer for the two of you. Parenting, who is either going to run in the Travers or the Pennsylvania Derby. But what about hero status?
Yeah, he sure came with a big race. You know, I mean, there's something to say. You know, he's been a very nice horse. And there's something to say about, you know, these three-year-olds, especially the ones that have only ran a couple of times. As sensational as parenting is and has been to this point, when you face those older horses for the first time, and, you know, it's culture shock, I think, you know, and he took a nice run at him and came up a little short, but we were extremely pleased with the race. He came back to me after a stint in Arkansas and Kentucky last year, and we had given him some time off and got him over a few things, and he's come back very well. And his first start back, he stumbled, you know, completely to the ground. But his two races and had no chance, and then his two races since have been great.
What do you do with him, knowing, you know, given the company, is there a stake opportunity for him somewhere soon?
You know, potentially, you know, certainly off of, you know, we have kind of thought he's an in-betweener, meaning he's not quite a stakes horse.
Right.
But a little better than, you know, running for 80,000, which is what he's been running for now, because he's already broke the 2X allowance race. You know, now we have to have a little different perspective off of that effort. So I'm not quite sure which direction we'll go now, but still has a 3X condition available to him, and he's 5 years old, so he should be in the prime of his career.
Really nice. Hero status. Let me ask you about the two maidens on Friday at Del Mar. You actually got two in on Thursday, too. Leah's Candy in a claimer, and I'm still in it, a maiden claimer. But then Normandy Queen and Dangerous Affair in two maiden special spots on Friday.
Yeah, Normandy Queen's, you know, she ran a very, very respectable race in her debut. You know, I had contemplated whether to sprint her one more time before we stretched out, but ultimately we're in going a mile on Friday. She's a very classy acting filly, has never really done anything wrong. And, you know, just looking forward to getting her stretched out and seeing what start number two brings. But she was stuck down on the inside in her first start and really kind of took the worst of it, but still ran very credible. And then Dangerous Affair surprised us a little. She hadn't shown much, you know, before she debuted, and we weren't sure quite what to expect. Partially why we started her on the turf, because she had actually a lot of turf on the bottom side in her pedigree, and she ran very well. To say we were pleasantly surprised would be an understatement, and certainly looked like more ground in watching that first race would be beneficial to her. And so we're equally excited to see what start number two brings for her.
Excellent. Well, Mark, you're running on a regular basis. You've started a bunch already, and off to a great start. A couple of stake wins, and there's obviously some, you know, some good older maidens and some 2-year-olds that are yet to come. I've got a feeling I'll talk to you plenty between now and Labor Day.
Yeah, let's hope so. I know when you're calling, that must mean I'm on a pretty good stretch of luck.
Well, you make your own luck, and you're well on your way to again eclipsing your best year. It looks like when we get to the end of the calendar, having another super season and some interesting developments, including Dr. Venkman stretched out successfully in the San Diego and eyeballing a Pacific Classic start. And either way, he could be a precisionist. He could sprint in the Breeders' Cup, or he could go in the Classic, maybe, or the Mile. Who knows?
Yeah, the Mile. I don't think he's going to run in the sprint, but certainly the Mile is seems to be well within his wheelhouse at this point.
Excellent. Mark Glatt, everybody. Next time we talk, I want to talk to you about your appointment with the TOC, too. All right?
You got it.
Always a pleasure. Mark Glatt, folks, and Dr. Venkman. And like I said, watch the Ghostbusters, the latest Ghostbusters, where there's a little Dr. Venkman. There's just enough of Venkman and some Aykroyd. All the living original Ghostbuster stars are make at least a cameo in this new movie. Andy Serling's going to join us next, and then we'll slip in Eric Kruljack, and we will slip in Todd Pletcher. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. Still knee-deep in recapping the weekend on both coasts and in the middle.
Very exciting to hear. Are they okay in Iowa after the big disappointment?
Yes, they've regrouped. They've recovered and they've gone on with it.
They moved on, okay, because I figured it was probably pretty hard for them. I mean, you're extremely big in Iowa.
Well,
but you underestimate how big you are in the state.
It had actually been a long time between visits. It would have been a long time between visits. It's been a long time for me. But you've never.
Correct.
When I was working with Procter & Gamble in Kansas City, I used to have to go to Iowa for Iowa State. I was a client that...
I would have gone if I had gone to any of the debt shows there, but I didn't. The closest I come to Iowa is talking to Jerry Crawford.
There you go.
I saw him the other day, but I was in the midst of something that I didn't really get to talk to him, unfortunately.
Well, Dennis Alba, and how about Maggie Moss, and there's no shortage of Iowans prominent in the game.
I'm sure there are many.
By the way, speaking of Iowans and the reference to Dennis Alba, had Dale Romans this hour, Andy, off of his two. Did you see his two maiden wins yesterday?
Steve, what do you think the chances are of paying attention to Dallas yesterday? if you had to bet like $100, would you say you would want to take 1,000 to 1? 980 to 1. The closest I get to paying attention to Ellis is that I'm friends with Kevin Kirstein. That is how close I come to looking.
Well, you're friends with Dale and the
kids.
That's
true, but
you know,
Dale's also not watching all of my achievements. Thankfully for him,
you'd
or
be
lack
surprised.
Thereof. No, I won't. I saw Dale the other day. No, I did chat with him. I saw him and Tammy. It's nice.
He's
I saw Tammy the week before. She was honking at me as I was coming out of the movies. But I saw them both at the track the other day. It was good to see them.
He's on his way back. He was. I talked to him at. He was at Muhammad Ali, and was coming back.
He's with Muhammad Ali. Does he know he's dead?
He was at Muhammad Ali.
What's Muhammad Ali?
The airport in Louisville.
Why don't you just refer to it as Louisville Airport? Your pretensions know no end.
Well, if I wanted
you
to
really
be really
are.
Pretentious,
you're the king of pretension.
I would have.
Steve Pretentious Bick.
I would have said Standiford, the original name.
Of the people listening, what percentage of them knew that it was Muhammad Ali, what you're referring to, as opposed to people would know if you said Louisville Airport?
I'm going to tell you, because Louisville happens to be our most listened to city, I'm going to say that 98% knew.
98% of the people from Louisville knew you were referring to the airport. Okay, that's really great. No, seriously, it's great. The 19 of them all knew. And what percentage of the people that aren't from Louisville would have known if you just said he's coming from the Louisville airport or he's coming from Louisville? Maybe he drove.
I think you're underestimating how many people are aware.
I don't think I'm underestimating how pretentious you are.
That may be true. Ah, you're unbelievable. All right, let's dive in and start with fierceness and Sierra Leone. There's a lot to digest with this.
A lot. I've digested it and moved on. I'm not sure how much digesting I want to do. It's a good race. It's a really good race. I mean, you know, at a certain point on the Tuesday after, I've been on TV for hours and talked about it. It's a little less exciting to me than maybe it is to you, but it was a really good race. And, you know, it's nice to see Fierceness run well because, you know, he's obviously got the talent to run well in his races. He just doesn't seem to have the talent to make that happen every time. And, you know, obviously stalking an inferior rival in here made it easier, but the pace was fair. It wasn't blistering, but it wasn't crawling. And, you know, it was interesting. Johnny really thought he was going to lead. I don't know what the hell happened to Seize the Gray, but I guess he just can't run at all anymore. Because one thing I know, Wayne's not rating him, and he had no speed. But Joel sort of sent the saddler horse, so he had to stalk that horse. But it was an honest enough pace, and I thought it was a good move by Johnny, swinging out in the stretch, figuring Sierra Leone wanted to come around him. So he forced him to come a bit inside of him, which I don't think Sierra Leone was uncomfortable with. You know, obviously you'd probably like to make your rally outside. But I think Sierra Leone ran extremely well in there. He ran the biggest fire he's ever run, and Fierceness got back to one of his good races, which is good to see. I you know, they were the two big dogs, and they showed up. And I think big races are good when the two big players show up and put on a good show, and they did. And Batten Down's a nice horse, but it's still, you know, a few lengths away from being quite as good as those horses. Whether or not that changes will remain to be seen. But he's still pretty good. But listen, I'm glad that Fierce has ran the race he's capable of, because you know he's a good horse in there somewhere, but he obviously just has sort of character flaws. He can't really compete at the highest level when he doesn't have a favorable trip. And I thought he had a fairly favorable trip in here, but he ran well, so I'm not going to knock him. You know, I know they're talking about not running back in the Travers, and he's their horse, and they should, you know, handle him as they see correctly. I'm not in the business telling owners and trainers where they should run. I don't want to hear, you know, maybe things have changed, but, you know, I think it's important to note that his one of his best races ever, the Breeders' Cup, was 27 days after Champagne. So in the past, he's run well with, you know, relatively limited time, though I don't think 4 weeks is limited. But if Todd feels he needs more time now, so be it. He's his trainer. I'm sure they'd like to win the Travers. I doubt they're not running because thinking he could win, you know. Now, I'm sorry there's a Pennsylvania Derby out there, you know, is sort of an alternative for people, but it is what it is, and it's always been that way, and it'll probably remain that way. But I'd like to see him in the Travers. He's good, but I can understand their feelings. There will be a lot of pace in there. It's a mile and a quarter race. Probably not a great race for him, you know? But you want to see the best horses line up in the biggest races. But listen, once again, I'm not going to criticize an owner. If he thinks it's not the right spot for him, then he should do otherwise. It's their horse. It's their decision.
Well, we'll talk to Todd before the end of the show today, and we'll see what the latest thoughts are. It seems to me that I'd be surprised if we get to Travers Week and he's doing okay, that they wouldn't run out of their own stall.
I know. They've also got to realize they also have Mindframe. The same connections have Mindframe, who's clearly a major player in the Travers. So maybe that's part of their thinking.
Maybe.
Like I said, I don't think they're leaving him in the stall if they think he can win. So, you know, and he's doing well. So, there's a difference between wishing a horse would run but telling connections what they should do with their horses. I just think that's a very slippery slope, because you'll end up telling one connection what they should do and another connection who maybe, you know, you're friends with say, well, they're doing the right thing by their horse. You know what I mean? They'll do the right thing by their horse. I think whatever they decide, I think it would be great if you ran the Travers, but I'm not, like I said, I don't think it's fair for us to tell them what they should do. Like I said, if they really feel they can win the Travers, they'll be in there.
Now fold in then Andy Kenny McPeak's call to go ahead and contest the Travers with Torpedo Anna.
Well, now that Kenny and I have sort of made up a little bit, I get a kick out of Kenny, and you know he's entertaining. There's no doubt about it. Listen, he's a gamer. What can I tell you? You know, I'll make fun of him sometimes about where he puts his horses, but he's a gamer, and the Travers is a much more fun race with her in it. I mean, it's generating nothing but conversation, and I think that's part of his point. So to that end, you know, I tip my hat to him. I would run in the Alabama, but I'm a chicken, you know. What do you want me to say? I would look at that race and see there and think, well, I don't know, I'm going to be 1-5 in one of the biggest races in the country for 600,000, or I can be 5-2 or 3-1. For twice the money against the boys, and I'd, you know, start clucking and running the $600,000 race. But Kenny's not a chicken. He's a lot of things, but he's not a chicken. So I applaud them, me and the connections. They want to take a shot there. I don't think I'll be betting her, but I know one thing. If she wins, I'll be excited. I mean, she's able to win a race like that, then, you know, that's a giant accomplishment. So I'm, you know, and it's not like she's, you know, I think she'll be a little over bet in there, but she's not an 8-1 shot, you know?
That's a great, Andy, and of course, it's hard to know given the fierceness Mindframe scenario, but I mean,
let's assume fierceness isn't running, just, you know. Well, she's an adaptable horse. She doesn't need the lead, but she is a pressing horse, but she can sit. I don't think it's a race that the pace is going to do her in. And frankly, what I've seen, she does the pace in.
That's true.
I mean? So, now, that's obviously true. Against slightly less competition, but nevertheless, still running figures that are comparable to these. So, I mean, she does have a quality where, you know, running with her seems to be very, very difficult for other horses, and she comes out of those things unscathed. So she has that quality, which very few horses have, to be involved in, you know, honest paces, going a distance of ground and burying her competition and then drawing off. And, you know, there's nothing about her wins that smacks of lucky or opportunistic. Not a single one of them.
No.
She was wide the whole way in the race at Oaklawn. She was at a demanding pace that took its toll on some very good horses in Kentucky. And Just FYI, who's a very good horse, had a perfect trip behind her and couldn't get close to her. And then Just FYI tried her in a very fast pace in the Acorn, and she destroyed her. I mean, you know, I don't even know where Just FYI is after that performance. You know, she's laying good horses to waste. And, you know, okay, was her last race as good as some of the others? Well, she, you know, she blew the brake and put her out of position. So, I don't know. She's good. Well, you know, it's like, listen, I was critical of Songbird, not because she wasn't have quality, but she was getting very soft trips against lesser fields. She is the opposite of Songbird. And that's not to say Songbird wasn't a good horse. But I'll tell you one thing. Songbird wouldn't want it any part of this horse.
Hmm. Is she, Andy, is she a horse whose potential belies the figures?
I don't know. You know, I'm a figure guy. But I don't, and that's a fair question. I think, I'll put it this way. She's earning her figures, whatever they are. And her performances are never lower than the figure. If anything, they're higher. You know, I'd look at pace-related
right.
figures like CJ's. You know, I would sort of defer that. I think, you know, how a figure is earned, she's earning them. She ain't getting lucky. You know what I mean? She's not cruising
sure.
at a slow pace. She's the real deal. I don't have any problem. I think she's terrific. Don't get me wrong. I think she's every bit. I mean, I think some people may overrate her a bit going to Travers, possibly. But I'm not sure how much they're overrating her. And there's nothing you can say about her races other than they were really, really good and arguably, as you suggest, better than any figure would suggest. She's the real deal. Whether or not she can beat these horses in Travers, I don't really care about that. And I would hate to think that would diminish. You know, let's say she runs fourth in the Travers. That should not diminish from what she's done before that in any possible way.
It's going to make for just a fascinating field. And
also, I don't think she's beating up on a bunch of bad horses. I think she's making good horses look bad, and that's the mark of a very good horse.
That's true, too.
You know, I hope that nobody thinks, you know, if I bet against the Travers, it's because I don't respect her. I think she's terrific. You know, I'm a huge fan, I'm always ready to be critical. I have no criticism of her. She's winning the hard way.
All right. Well, we're being with every passing weekend as contenders emerge, and you know, Baffert will either send Muth or Parenting. So this is going to be a lot of fun.
What are we looking at for the Travers? We're looking at Dornick, Mindframe, Sierra Leone, who, by the way, I think is a very high candidate. I'll get to him in a second. Sierra Leone, Unmatched Wisdom, the filly is 5. You're saying that one of the Bobs is 6. So who else will be in there?
Corporate Power, Honor Marie.
Okay. Yeah, Honor Marie, Corporate Power. Okay, it's 8.
We'll see what about Batten Down? They're gonna.
I have no idea. Bill hasn't called me. But when he does, I'll let you know. I'll find out from Lee. You're good friend, Lee. Who guaranteed me his horse had no chance Saturday and almost won at 16-1.
He
said to me, I was watching the race, I was thinking, oh, no, I can't believe what I told Andy. I said, Lee, I was rooting for you. I don't care if you like your horse or not. I like to see you win. He actually can't possibly think I'm betting my money for or against because he likes the horse. My friend.
You'll be shocked that I watched the race with him.
You were watching the race because I think there was an attractive woman in the box. Let's get honest about why you were in the box.
He was genuinely shocked and thrilled, actually, by the whole thing.
We should talk about the winner of that race.
Well, that's the McKenzie, the first McKenzie winner.
That was by win the Breeders' Cup.
He was very good. Chancellor McPatrick for the Flanagan team.
I mean, horses don't win races like that and run decent figures. He got an 81 buyer, 6.5 first time out. And when you consider the way the race was run and whatever he was doing early, I'm sure someone will say he liked the kickback, but I will tell you one thing. Flavia did not suggest that when he was talking after the race. Doesn't mean it didn't happen, but that horse had some issues early and was way back. And I was watching with Jonathan. We were in the show, and he said, boy, he's in a tough spot. I said, well, he's not winning from there. He did.
Yeah,
that was some performance. He's a very, very promising horse as a McKenzie. And, you know, Chad had said to me, I knew he was very high on him, but he said, you know, he's a router. He said, I think he can win this race because he's so good. But he wants to go a route of ground, and he's been high on some of the McKenzies as well. So I know, you know, it's interesting. Complexity and Vekoma have had so much success early, and I have no doubt that they'll continue to do well. But their horses are probably bred to be sort of, you know, fast early. And a horse like McKenzie, we'll find out who he is as they stretch out more. But from what I've heard, at least from Chad, he's high in the ones, some of the ones he has. So that's and this horse is clearly a runner.
Yeah. In fact, I just got done with Mark Glatt, with Tim Yakteen, who on Sunday had another McKenzie.
You'll be very surprised to hear that I'm also not paying attention to California.
Well, you've got a full.
Another chosen Braun one. My plate's kind of full.
Yeah, no doubt. Before we talk about the sprint stake winners that were very notable, I do want to mention what do you think of Speakeasy's return?
Well, he ran good. He got a 97 buyer. Another horse looks like he was going nowhere in the backstretch. A very different performance in his debut. So it's nice to see him back, and he ran a comparable figure. So he seems like a player going forward. Don't know if they would, you know, rush to get into the King's Bishop or the Alan Jerkins, excuse me, with him, but we'll see.
Well, speaking of the King's Bishop Alan Jerkins, let's talk about world record. I had Rudy Brissett yesterday. That was, I don't care if the track was slick or not.
Well,
that was some effort.
The track wasn't slick, but it was a day that the inside was exaggerating performances. So
right.
I would be careful. He was very impressive. There's no doubt about it. But there were quite a few races that were run by horses that wired the field that got exaggerated figures. So I would be very careful getting two over the top without his 101. He ran very well. I'm not trying to knock him, but that's a race that I want to see it again. And he's a good horse. I'm not knocking him, but, you know, he also was able to control the pace. And while it was a very honest pace, he still controlled the pace.
That's fair.
You know, there is speed out there. I'm assuming that that Doug O'Neill is coming with that horse that, you know, ran the big race, the race after the Derby, and subsequently has won since then.
Vlahos.
No, that's Vlahos, a different horse. Vlahos horse was scratched from the Woody Stevens. I'm talking about the horse that won the race after the Derby. Vlahos ran in the Pat Day Mile. If I wasn't lying down in the other room, I would look at my computer and get his name. Do I have to get up?
No, it's something raging something.
Yeah, Raging Torrent.
Thank you.
Well, you got it. You're the one. You don't thank me. You got the hard part. No, that's going to be a great race, no doubt about it.
Well, then you got the two horses from New Jersey.
Yep. And what's his name?
Derek Ryan.
Derek Ryan said that on our show that the big horse will be running the Alan Jerkins, because I know they had some discussions about running him in a lucrative race out of town. He is a gelding. I get it.
Eddie Owens wants to come with the runner-up from that Jersey Shore.
That
Little
horse
Knee.
Good too. Yeah, that horse ran great.
Little
no
Knee.
No doubt. I got a 101 buyer. A lot of 101 buyers floating around for these
exactly.
horses.
Exactly.
I think that's what Domestic Product got. I think that's what World Record got.
Yep.
No,
I want to ask you.
Three-year-olds around.
We didn't. I mentioned it in passing, but I know you had the same opinion I did. Out of the Caress, Don't Look Back at All, with a nice rally under Irad to win for Clement, but Trombetta's horse, the Intercontinental winner, Future Is Now. Oh my God!
Yeah, she ran very well. she was good. That was a great race.
It really was.
The turf sprints have been fun races. Yeah, that was a really good race. You know, they have good finishes and fun races. The horse that I love is Dance Macabre. I just love the fact that Dance Macabre, that she just shows up every time. She ran 11 times with 5 wins, 5 seconds, and a third. And, you know, she's coming off a layoff. She got beat a nose. She had a rally inside of horses. She's just a really neat horse.
Wow.
It's crazy they made the Godolphin horse the favorite in that race.
That was very strange. I agree.
Well, I think the lesson out of that is that, for the most part, the European sprinters don't necessarily have an advantage over our sprinters. And all you need to do is follow the Breeders' Cup to have seen that over the years. They're not, they don't have the, it's not, they don't have the same kind of advantage that they have on our routers. And she was running in mediocre races. I understand we're all sort of scared of Godolphin and feel like whatever they run could win. I get that. But, you know, I mean, it's interesting that Eternal Hope is in the Glens Falls on Thursday, I want to say. And the weather looking right now. Hang on. You know, I hear she's working well. So in that regard, you know, maybe she'll run well. But, yeah, it's supposed to rain tomorrow. But Thursday, Friday, Saturday are fine. I mean, she's not very good, Eternal Hope. Now, she may have improved, but her race as a three-year-old are remarkably average. Now, people will say, well, she beat Niecy Marie, and look at Niecy Marie now. And that's very fair, except maybe Niecy Marie's really improved from then, has she. And she'll probably be favored because of the Godolphin factor, but I think that, frankly, I think that McEwen should be favored. Or well, Chop Chop.
There's, hold on, let me pull out, as since we went in this direction. Well, I do want to ask you, let me, before we talk about just a little top line of Whitney Day and such, what is your view and what is a potential solution that people are wondering about when it comes to the fifth on Sunday with the gate DQ and the non-starter regulatory risk and what's the right thing to do with that, Andy?
Let me say something. The right thing to do is what we did.
Yeah.
Because those are the rules. And when you start deciding which rules, you arbitrarily start deciding which rules you do and don't follow, that's when you get in trouble. Do I feel for people? Absolutely. Listen, I've been waiting for that Amos horse, the three, to run for weeks.
Yep.
Now, frankly, given the winner got an 84 buyer, I don't think she would have won. So when I saw the buyer figure of the race, it made me feel better. What do I think? Well, for the people that think there should be no contest, and I understand that sentiment, they need to ask themselves how they would feel if they bet the winner, who won for fun. I get it. It's an incredibly frustrating set of circumstances for every single entity involved. How would you like to be the starter? And, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Andy Fier about it yesterday morning, and he, you know, and he was asked by the starter, well, did he push the, you know, should he not have pushed the button and everything? And I was kind of adamantly defending Hector. And he texted me back later, and he said, I've watched it a few more times, and you're right. The starter did nothing wrong. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, Steve. Given the number of starts that take place in the course of a year, it's amazing crap like that doesn't happen more often. It's amazing how infrequently that happens in racing. I completely understand people's, you know, frustration, especially given it was the last leg of the pick five and also the first leg of the pick six. So how somebody hit that pick six on Sunday will remain a great mystery even to Nostradamus. But the series of events was crazy, right? First of all, regulatory risk breaks literally the split second that Hector's hitting the button, right? I don't know what he's supposed to do about that. The guy who deserves incredible praise is the assistant starter who held Amos's horse.
Yes.
Because if he had not held that horse, that could have been a disaster. Because she would have run smack dab into the middle of regulatory risk. And that would have been far worse than anything that happened here. So whoever that was, that guy deserves a lot of praise. And I don't think there's any argument against that. Because he saved the horse, he saved maybe two horses, and saved a terrible situation. Now, clearly, what regulatory risk did and coming over and interfering the others was a complete disaster. I get all of that. And it's really unfortunate. But the rule states if a horse breaks the gate early and the horse is responsible for it, that horse is disqualified. If it's through a some sort of failure of equipment, then it's a refund. But it was the horse that caused it. As far as the three, she didn't have a fair start, so she was a refund. These are the rules, and I don't think anybody can argue that these rules are particularly unfair. After that, I don't know what they were supposed to do. It's a horrible situation for every single person involved, particularly bettors, but everyone involved. You know, how do you feel if you're Seth with regulatory risk? How do you feel if you're Amos and his owner with this? You know, it's all awful. The amazing thing about the entire race is how badly Sedona ran, despite the circumstances.
Yeah, I didn't get her at all.
Before the race was run, all of that was going to happen. You'd have run the window to take whatever price you could have thrown in. I don't even like her.
I that's so funny because she was like 2-1, and I didn't.
She was 1-5 when they broke. I mean, it was only, you know. So yeah. And you know, and the winner did run a big race. I don't know where, but should the people who bet her and her connections to Tim Ambe, you know, punished because of that? I don't know the fairest answer. The fairest answer is to follow the rules. And to once again, you know, I'm a multi-race bet player as well, but there's always risks in playing them. You multiply the possibility of something crazy happening, right, by the number of races in there.
Yeah.
Unfortunate, it's an unfortunate part of the game. The vagaries of the game are going to cost you all year long. It's part of why we like the game, because of the vagaries of the game. Sometimes the vagaries of the game help you, right?
Yeah, occasionally.
Listen, I made a nice hit on Saturday with the double into that Mott horse that Jose Ortiz gave the unbelievably great ride to the race after Chance McPatrick.
Lamorna?
Yeah, she should have lost. The second horse stumbled to start.
Yep, Satin Blue, who I bet 10-1.
Right, I mean, she should have won. I got lucky. You know, the vagaries, the game will punish some, and they're going to reward some as well. And it's important to remember when they reward you, so that when they punish you, you can say, well, you know, you don't feel as though it ever evens out, and it probably doesn't. And the better handicapper you are, the less it will even out, because the more likely you're to be on the bad end of it. Having said that, I feel for people that were, and I understand their frustration. I do. I've been there many times. But that doesn't mean the stewards did anything wrong or the stars did everything wrong. And I still firmly believe whoever the assistant starter was in the gate with the three, that person did an incredible job. Did their job, but in doing their job, did something really, really positive. Is that fair?
100%. I sort of, you know, mentally watching it said, well, the three's a non-starter and they got to DQ the four.
I think we all knew what was going to happen that had been around.
Yeah, exactly. I think the thing that came up, and I've gotten a couple of emails about it too, is what the potential, the thing that always irks people is the getting the post-time favorite scenario. That is there a
the
better...
The only answer to that, you know, is to have an alternate selection. I get all that. But, I get it, but we don't have one.
No, we don't.
And it's still the rules of the game. I hate
exactly.
It too, trust me. Yeah. Was Sedona the post-time favorite?
No, I think Regulatory Risk was.
So
that's what was sort of funny about it.
So, but who became the post-time favorite after she was? No. Oh, she wasn't disqualified, right? Oh, it's not funny.
No, it's not. It's crazy.
I record saying that was funny. Unfortunate part of it.
Yes.
Listen, I get it. I do. I do get it. I know people don't think I do, but I do. I've played the horse a long time. I've been on the wrong side of a lot of these things, but I still don't know what else we could have done differently. And a lot, and the rules in racing are for the greatest good. And, you know, whenever there's a major horse scratch in a race, and I always root for the post-time favorite unless I'm involved, just so people in multi-races don't get the raw end of the deal.
Exactly.
Or as they say, the fuzzy end of the lollipop.
Andy, I've only got a minute because I still got Cruel Jack and Pletcher to get to, but
a quick look ahead.
Well, I just your overview, your introduction to Saturday, and an amazing dozen in the Whitney.
Yeah, it's great. Oh, the Whitney's. I mean, I haven't made opinions of the Whitney, but I've gotten through most of the card, and it's a terrific card. The last three races might be the best three races of all. There's a Bowers of one after the Whitney's. A terrific race, and the allowance of the last, the turf is terrific. Yeah, no, and the lure. I was very happy to see More Than Looks back. I'm an enormous fan of that horse, and I think that all of those in the Four Star Dave should be extremely happy that he didn't get a prep race to go there, because I think he has potential to be the best turf miler in the country. If you don't believe that horse, you got to go back and look at some of the races that horse ran last year. that horse is good. Look at the win in the Manila. Look at the third in the Hall of Fame when the rails were good. And look at the win at Churchill where he won under crazy circumstances. And even his Breeders' Cup race, given the post, though he did get the rail, but had to be way back to get there. It's a very good horse.
Yeah. Yeah. And has been working well, it looks like, preparing.
No, it's bring on your more important guests. I'll talk to you later.
I appreciate it. Andy Serling, everybody. And good week in the rearview mirror. And a wouldn't even talk about the 37,000 Saturday. The place was had a great atmosphere. We're going to try to get Eric Cruel Jack in here for a quick hit before Todd Pletcher, because obviously I've got I doubt I'm going to be able to catch up everything with Todd, but we certainly have to talk the fierceness, mind frame, quotient. And if you hadn't noticed, Todd also with Rapoli and with Paco Lopez, they won the Monmouth Oaks with Scalable, which I had a different, to quote Norman Dale, I had something different in mind. Hoosiers was on last night. If you see on Twitter, you see those questions. What movie have you seen, you know, more than 10 times? It doesn't occur to me immediately, but Hoosiers, when you're spinning the dial, even it was actually Tina who was spinning the dial last night and said, "Ooh, Hoosiers." And then she took a phone call, so I had to watch the last 45 minutes. Yeah. It's so good. Just unbelievable how good it is. You know, small, right? Just a small, old-fashioned kind of a film. Well, then, you know what, Brian, it could possibly be because of he might not recognize. No, actually, it looks like I'm sensing that. Yeah, it's going directly to voicemail. All right. Well, Cruel Jack can be he can be a little elusive. So, all right. Well, then, in that case, we may table Cruel Jack. There's still time for him tomorrow. I should mention Thursday before the start of the round table, we'll be joined by Lisa Lazarus. And I haven't even had a chance yesterday. Thursday or Friday? The latest quarterly report. Here we go. Hold on. I'm receiving some news. Because we got 5 minutes to kill before Todd. And I'll tell you what we're going to do. Watch this. Brian Skirka. We're going to slip in a little Brian Skirka visit because you want to talk about top-notch advertising power, Brian.
Oh, boy. You just called to butter me up?
You bet. I get it just so happens there was a 4.5-minute window before Todd Pletcher to talk about the
I have to fill for Todd Pletcher? Oh, my God.
Yes.
This is a career highlight.
Well, of course, we're going to talk to him about obviously, man, the performance of fierceness and mind frame, but also the win in the Monmouth Oaks on Saturday under Paco was Scalable. But tell me about this contest Saturday.
Yep, so it's Monmouth and Saratoga races. It's totally a Monmouth run contest, but we are including Saratoga races. Obviously, they have a tremendous card on Saturday with the Whitney and many other great races. You can play it on site here at Monmouth, or you could play it online through TVG or ExpressBet. If you do play here at Monmouth, we obviously would love you to do that. We're going to give you a 25% cash prize bonus to do so. So if you happen to win a $10,000 cash prize and you're on ExpressBet, you win $10,000. If you win a $10,000 cash prize and you're here at Monmouth, you win $12,500. So we want to give you a little incentive to be here, but you can play through TVG and ExpressBet. It's Monmouth Saratoga races only. All the mandatory races are from Monmouth. We obviously need to promote our races. So it's a $500 buy-in for the contest. You get a $250 bankroll. You must make five bets at Monmouth of $50 a piece. You have to bet five races at least $50 a piece. Provided by the end of the contest you do that, you could bet any other race from Monmouth or any race from Saratoga. We're taking the full card from Saratoga, so the last race from Saratoga will be the last race of the contest.
Outstanding. And what kind of seats are available?
Two BCBC, two NHC, and $20,000 cash based on 200 entries. Knock on wood, our last few contests have been over 200, so we'll hopefully go up from there. But at least two BCBC, two NHC, $20,000 cash, and cash to the top 10 finishers.
And while we're on the topic, because I didn't, you know, last week was a blur. How about the Haskell contest? Who were the top finishers?
It was just amazing. So I think we had 332, I want to say. It was a blur for me as well. So somewhere in the 320s, 330s was the final number for the Haskell contest, which is just unbelievable. I know that Pete Rogers ended up winning the contest. He's a Jersey guy, obviously, you know, well known in the handicapping contest circle. So it's good to see him. And that was his second win of the year at Monmouth Park so far. So good to see him. He's already double NHC qualified, so he took a BCBC seat. I'm trying to filibuster very quickly as I pull up the final results of the Haskell contest. But it was we ended up giving out 10 BCBC seats and two NHC seats based on that 323 entries.
Wow.
So 10 BCBC seats and two NHC seats. So BCBC seat winners, just real quick: Pete Rogers, Bill Chenvert, Tyler Hoffman, Mike Lazarus, Adam Haskins, Alan Schaefer, Neil Thomas, Francis Paros, Tom Arndt, and Kirk Tesser received NHC seats. And Adam Haskins and Mark Statler got NHC seats. So it was, again, the last two contests we've had, knock on wood, have been over 300 entries. So kudos to all the players out there who are supporting the format.
Out of curiosity, with the new wrinkle, of course, with the market opening up in Jersey, how soon will Naira Betts players be able to participate, do you expect?
That's a good question. That's slightly above my pay grade. Once they, I would think, once they get approved to, Naira Betts to be a valid ADW in New Jersey, which should be relatively soon, I would think that there's no reason that they can't jump into the contest. I know Naira Betts, as it stands now, has some different rules for New York. New
right.
York players have some different rules than national Naira Betts players, so I'm not exactly sure how that would break out, if there would still be that distinction between New York players and the rest of the country. But hopefully, the market opens relatively soon. We see a lot of new people, and they all come into the contest.
I love it. Brian Skirka with us quickly for Saturday's $500 buy-in contest that combines the Monmouth card with the just eye-crossing Saratoga, Whitney, Test, Troy, etc. card, and BCBC, NHC seats, and more on the docket. And of course, they got to register by Friday.
Yeah, but if they're playing TVG, they have to register Friday. If you're playing ExpressBet, you have through First Post for Monmouth. For Monmouth, and then if you're on site, we actually keep registration open till 2 o'clock, so you have 11 to 2 to sign up if you're on site. So a few different rules, but any confusion, just reach out to me. I'll talk you through everything.
B Skirka at monmouthpark.com.
100%.
Outstanding, Brian. Thanks again for the terrific week at Haskell Week, and let me know. Send me a graphic, and we'll circulate that out there for everybody.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on short notice. I hope I didn't scare away your listeners in advance of a much more important Todd Fletcher interview, but good luck with everything, and thanks for the promo, as always.
My pleasure. Brian Skirka, everybody, who, of course, is probably busy getting ready as well for Kentucky Downs, the Kentucky Downs contest. We'll keep reminding everybody. That is well worth, that's probably well worth doing, the 500. With Monmouth and Saratoga's Saturday action, and Saratoga's action for Todd Pletcher and Monmouth's action Saturday was pretty good because he won the Monmouth Oaks, and then hours later, probably excitedly watched as because I wasn't watching you every minute, Todd, but I did see the hubbub in the Rapoli box as Mindframe persevered to the wire and wins the Jim Dandy. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Fierceness.
Fierceness.
But
what did I say?
Yeah, you said Mindframe, which made me think, like, kind of at the eighth poles, like, oh, no, we're not going to see the same thing here again, are we? With that we saw Mindframe in the Haskell, but no, it was great to have Fierceness come back and show up and run his race.
I'm going to ask you the question on a broader basis that I brought up yesterday when sort of recapping the weekend and anticipating the Travers. Todd, do you recall a season where, you know, horsemen like you and Chad Brown and Danny Gargan have had to work so hard and have had top colts, you know, require, you know, constant attention and adjustment and have these quirks and have these, you know, sort of unusual, I don't want to call them performance issues, but it's really kind of interesting that arguably the top three horses in the division have all required a lot of hard work and attention.
That's a good point. You know, I don't know historically. You'd have to look back and see. I will say this. I kind of said it all last week too. That I think, you know, Fierceness is a little bit maybe over criticized for being an every other out performer. When I think really you have to give him a legitimate excuse in the Holy Bull, and that race was so roughly run into the first turn. He got creamed leaving the gate, and so, you know, it wasn't, to me, that race was, while obviously it was hugely disappointing when you're expected to win, but, you know, he did run third that day, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't as bad maybe as I think some people make it out to be, but you know, he certainly, the Derby, you know, it's a different animal than just about any race.
Sure.
So we've seen a lot of horses over the years not fire their best shot there and then come back and do well. So, you know, I think if you look at it from that perspective and kind of give him an excuse in the Holy Bull and throw out the Derby, he's maybe a little more consistent than it sometimes seems.
You had to be encouraged the way he stalked Sadler and looked very relaxed and comfortable sitting second down the backstretch.
Yeah, it was interesting on paper, you know, how the race was going to unfold. There was certainly appeared to be plenty of pace, and you know, we weren't sure how much speed the California horse would show. Certainly didn't expect Seize the Gray to not be part of the pace factor, and we knew that Batten Down, you know, is coming off a wire to wire win in the Ohio Derby. So it's one of those things you can kind of analyze like till you're blue in the face, but really until the gates open and you see what everyone else is doing, you don't really know. We didn't want to get in a four horse speed duel and set the race up for the favorite. So. And I thought Johnny rode a great race all the way around, and came out, got his position, got to where he wanted to, and got fierceness in a good rhythm, and allowed him to show his best.
Give us an overview, and what you foresee. You can fold in Mindframe, and him clearly being affected by the crop, and what is going to happen between now and Travers, and how do you foresee the decision making process with both of them?
Well, I mean, you know, we'll obviously monitor how they're doing. My initial impression is fierceness has bounced out of the race really well, and you know, it's going to be a tough call because, you know, we know for sure that if we gave him more time, that he's more likely to come back and run a good race. At the same time, he has run back in 27 days after the Champagne, which was probably a non-effort, and came back and, you know, ran terrific in the Breeders' Cup. So, yeah, he has run back well in short rest, but he hasn't necessarily run as well off of, you know, a top effort. But when you look at the spacing of it and the options, if you waited until the Pennsylvania Derby, September 21st, say he runs well in there, and then you're going to kind of worry about the quick turnaround to the Breeders' Cup. If you ran in the Travers, you could come into the Breeders' Cup very fresh. I don't know, a lot to digest and dissect, and I'm sure we'll be doing that quite a bit over the next week. And first and foremost, we'll take the horse back to the track tomorrow and see how he's training. And with Mindframe, we'll have the same idea there.
Well, I'm not going to – I shouldn't say anything, but I am going to say, to me, Fierceness, Travers, Breeders' Cup Classic, Mindframe, Pennsylvania Derby, Breeders' Cup Mile. That I'll throw that out there right now.
All right. Queen Tweet. Sounds good to me.
I've got a lightning round. We got about 3.5 minutes, and there's so many other fun things to talk about. I got to congratulate you on Tappet Trice, which is not getting nearly enough attention to bring that horse back and have him run that well.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a little bit frustrating because we got behind schedule, and we were hoping to have his first start Derby week, and instead it's on Haskell Day. But I thought he ran terrific. He had a bit of a wide trip, but he got into a good rhythm, and I thought he really leveled off and finished up well. And it was great to see him come back and do that, and you know, kind of puts him in a position to hopefully move forward to the Jockey Club, or I guess it'd either be Jockey Club or Pacific Classic, which probably be the Jockey Club with that being right here. But yeah, so it's good to have him back, and hopefully, with the eye up towards the Breeders' Cup Classic, hopefully.
Well, also under the under the radar for Mandy Pope was Grand Sonata's performance in the UN that was spectacular. It was literally what, a jump or two from winning.
Yeah, I had a bad angle in the box I was in. I actually thought he got his nose down, but I mean he's been a super consistent horse, and a little bit unlucky not to have a big win like that, but it was a good effort, and he's been definitely a consistent battler for us for several years now.
Then, of course, got asked the question, which of your other clients is going to buy a manual in the sale?
It's a good question. that'll be interesting. I tell you, when you look at a horse like that and you look at these Kentucky Downs purses, it's it's not far to think. If you got lucky,
right?
You could be out in one race.
For those that hadn't seen, Emmanuel is offered up in this pop-up sale online that closes Thursday, PhasicTipton.com, for those of you that are interested. I mentioned that Scalable won the Monmouth Oaks, and that's a nice win for her.
That was a great win for her. And, she's coming off what seemed to be her best race in the allowance race at Churchill, and made another move forward there. So it's Philly that's you know, we've been pretty aggressive with, maybe manager a little too aggressively at times, but I think, you know, the real key was just giving her some time after the turf experiment at Churchill, and those couple of months in between seemed to refresh in her and have her come back in the best form she's been in.
Nice. And what are we doing about Speakeasy? That you have to be pleased with that return.
Yeah, that was good. I was a little worried about 6 furlongs maybe being just a little too sharp for him, but he handled that well, and so happy with that. I don't know, we'll get together with the Windstar guys and Sienna guys and come up with a plan, but I don't know if we'll be as aggressive as the Alan Jerkins, but, you know, we feel like he has the talent to at least put that in the thought process.
You would think that that's irresistible. Looking ahead, we got about 90 seconds, and I typically don't do too much, you know, trainer previewing, but it's hard not to at least mention the troika that you send out in the Whitney. Charge It, Bright Future, and Croupy, and they've all got varying degrees of eligibility for success.
Yeah, they do. I mean, Bright Futures, 2-for-2 at Saratoga, won the Jockey Club last year, got a good prep in the Salvatore Mile. I think he's coming up to it the right way. I think he's got a hot pace scenario up front. Croupy could benefit from that. And then kind of a tough pose for Charge It coming from outside, but, you know, he's a horse that's always displayed a lot of talent. We can just get him to show up and run his best race.
I've got to quickly ask, which of the maidens break the maiden? Because you got a bunch of them. And how is it that assertiveness, that the little general didn't buy a daughter of a son of Isabella Sings?
Yeah, no, I mean, he's an interesting colt. You know, she was a pretty fast filly that was able to carry her speed over a distance of ground. So we're hoping he'll be able to do the same. And I think we do have some nice colts in those two divisions of the maiden race, but, you know, there are a couple of them are Curlins and three of them actually. And I think, you know, they're all two turn horses that hopefully, you know, they can show up and run well at 6 furlongs. But I think they're all horses that are looking for a little more distance down the road.
Well, Uncaged and Classicist, both in that fifth race as well. And then Contrabandist, And isn't this funny? There is Ann Mudge backer and Smitten Farm, who I brought up earlier this morning. Unbelievable.
Interesting.
What kind of a colt is that?
I think he's okay. Yeah, no, he's been training well. He's a gun runner colt, and you know, acts like he's got tactical speed. So I think you know, both those colts are going to be okay.
You had.